Our guest in this hour is the famed or infamous Rabbi Meir Kahana, a member of the Israeli Knesset, the founder of the Jewish Defense League. You may wonder, what do two people talk about like Meir Kahana and Larry King during the news waiting for him to go on? We talk mostly about Ebbets Field and the Dodgers, the one great love in both lives that still exists and burns brightly no matter where, L.A. or whatever. Anyway, Rabbi Kahana is our guest. He's had an eventful day. He spoke at the National Press Club this morning, and someone threw what, dye on you?
Yes, red dye.
And you continue just...
Never missed a beat.
Who was it? Did they apprehend him?
He was someone named Daniel Brown, who is, of course, Jewish, naturally. And he apparently runs something called Jews Against Zionism, which is an interesting commentary. When was the last time you ever heard of Arabs Against Palestine? Well, that says something about a rather sick segment of the Jewish people. In any case, we never missed a beat.
Rabbi, before we talk about you and current things, your response to this breaking story on Iran and your government's apparent involvement?
Outrageous. Outrageous. It's outrageous when it comes to Ronald Reagan. It's outrageous when it comes to Israel, particularly because these are two countries that have been chastising everybody else. I can only hope that most of it is not true, although my gut feeling is that all of it is true.
You're a member of the Knesset. What will the feeling in the Knesset be?
Well, the tragedy with this, Knesset is, of course, that with this national unity government, which has 97 of the 120 seats, the opposition is really impotent. There is almost nothing we can possibly say except raise the issue, ask for a no confidence motion, vote, lose it, but keep on talking about it.
There's going to be no great debate in Israel over this.
Oh, there'll be a great debate, but full of sound and fury, signifying almost nothing.
Rabbi, you have an unusual position, do you not, with the Jews in this country?
I must tell you something.
Most of them regard you, I guess, in an embarrassing manner.
Yeah. First, I was just listening to you earlier, and you said that M.J. Rosenberg will be on and out, and he won't appear on the, on the same show. I had no idea that he was an Arab.
What do you think it is? You would agree that a majority of American Jews...
Oh, sure. No, a majority of American Jewish leaders, in fact, all American Jewish leaders
take offense.
M.J. Rosenberg is terrified that if he's on this show with me in a debate, I'll wipe him out, destroy him, wipe him out.
Why do American Jewish leaders not like you?
Because I raise the most terrible and frightening, painful issues imaginable for Jewish liberals, and all American Jewish leaders are, of course, liberal.
Which are?
Well, for example, when I get up in, I'll say that there is an immutable contradiction between the concept of Zionism and a Jewish state on the one hand, and Western democracy, as we, of course, know it, on the other. That is the worst, the most painful, the most brutal kind of pain imaginable. Because the American Jew would like to believe that Judaism is Thomas Jefferson and Zionism is Burke and Rousseau. A Jewish state means a state where the Jews rule. Western democracy says nonsense. Jews, non-Jews, Chinamen. What's the difference? It's the majority that rules. M.J. Rosenberg, who isn't a person? He's a concept. He's a functionary. He gets paid. I remember M.J. when he was, of course, younger. He was an activist in the Soviet jury. He's gotten a fat salary, so he's gotten fat. But that's not the point. The point is that, can you imagine him sitting here and my turning to him and say, M.J., in theory now, do the Arabs have a right, in theory, to have enough babies and be a majority in Israel? Yes or no? He can't answer that question. If he says yes, then he's...
Why should there be a Jewish state?
That's the second question that I'll ask him.
Well, I'm asking you that.
Of course, I'm going to answer that. I never cop out on questions. But it's an even more difficult answer. Why be Jewish? You see, I mean, why be Jewish? I don't mean just because I was born Jewish, but why work at being Jewish? Well, because there obviously is no great answer if you're liberal. I mean, what is being Jewish? What's this nonsense? Want to be a human being and have a human state. unless you believe that God appeared at Sinai and gave the Jewish people a law which only they have and which is truth. Now, if that's true, that's a darn good reason to be a Jew. If it isn't true, well, MJ and all the MJs will have a great, great problem explaining to their kids why they should be Jewish and not humans.
So you think there should be a Jewish state with no non-Jews living there?
Not true. I think that there should be a Jewish state with as many non-Jews as are willing to live there as non-citizens, with their personal rights.
Or as an Arab could stay.
Absolutely.
But
anybody
not
can stay. But not vote.
You're not racist.
No. No. Racism means that that Arab is permanently an Arab, and he's permanently inferior. But if I believe that this same Arab, if tomorrow morning, if he would so choose to convert to Judaism, is as Jewish as Kahana, that isn't racism. We have a difference between Jews and non-Jews that is not based upon race at all. It is a religious difference. But race, there are black Jews, there are yellow Jews, there are all kinds of Jews. That's racism.
Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League. We'll talk about that. And a member of the Israeli Knesset. We'll be going to your phone calls as well. And there are many of them. We'll be back after these messages. Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana. Recently, there have been some actions, including the killing of an American Arab in this country, to which a call comes in, and the Jewish Defense League, which you founded, takes credit. What credence should we pay to this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not in any way linked to them. Now, I can only say I really don't think it was JDL. I can say this.
Does JDL purport violence? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I can say this, that if any Jew did kill him, it was a stupid thing. It was a dumb thing.
The Jewish Defense League does not believe in violence.
It does believe in violence, but
it does.
Of course it does. Tell me people outside of the Quakers that don't believe in violence at certain times. Violence has its place. What does the Bible say? There's a time for war and time for peace. In World War II, we didn't drop flowers on Berlin, Hamburg. There's a place for violence, but you have to have not only a fist, but a Jewish fist attached to a Jewish head.
What is its purpose, the JDL?
Well, its purpose, certainly when I founded it, was probably, let me give you three purposes. One, to change the Jewish image. We Jews had a good image, and that was bad. You know, Jewish kids would have their bikes taken, their lunch money, because Jews were nice kids. Well, I said, you know, be nice in its place, but, you know, punch them out when you have to. That's the one thing. Secondly, I wanted Jews to feel that if black is beautiful for blacks, and it is, then Jewish is beautiful for Jews, and Jewish interests come first for Jews. Now, not that there's no second interest or third. There are. But Jewish interests come first. And I was getting sick and tired of Jews marching for everybody in the whole world except Jews. So that was the second thing. The third practical measure was there were poor Jews being in Brownsville and Brooklyn and the South Bronx and Mattapan, Boston, being shaken down and beat up and terrified. Well, all the MJ Rosenberg types were running to Great Neck or Greater Neck or Greatest Neck. And from there, speaking about, you know, civil rights. Well, what about the civil rights of those poor Jews in Brownsville? And by the way, when I say poor Jews, it's not just an unfortunate Jew. I mean poverty-stricken Jews, which may come as a shock to all the anti-Semites who think that every Jew is a Rothschild. Well, there was some 200,000 poverty-stricken Jews in New York City alone.
And the League was supposed to do what?
They went in and patrolled. And if they saw muggers beating up Jews, they would teach them the, you know, the
commandment. Went and picketed the Soviets.
Oh, no. They didn't picket the Soviets. They beat up Soviets. They bombed the Soviets. Yeah. And they put the Soviet Jewish issue on page one. The Soviet Jewish question wasn't something new. It was for decades, and nobody marched for it. Nobody cared. The JDL did, and it acted.
This is Rabbi Kahana's second appearance, so we're going to go to your phone calls in a moment. One question on Israel, which I understood was presented today at the press club by a Palestinian, which is a fair question. A Palestinian, you were born in Brooklyn, right?
Right.
Palestinian person, born in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You're more of a citizen of that country than they are?
I'm not more of a citizen. I am a citizen, and they aren't.
Yeah, even though they were born there?
Of course. It's incredible for
they
me to...
They committed something wrong by being born there.
They stole my country from me.
The baby didn't.
Pardon?
The baby didn't.
The baby didn't?
The baby who was born there.
My dear fella, if someone... If you were thrown out of your home, and for no reason of... no fault of your own, you were not allowed to go back for 40, 50 years... And now you came back and you found somebody in that home and he's the baby of the person that took it. You would say, I understand the point, but it's my house. Well, it's our house after 2,000 years in which we never for a day stopped praying. And we turned to Zion and not to Mecca. It's our state. It was taken from us. We've come back. And I don't even bother to argue. I respect the Arab. I'm not a liberal who thinks that you can buy the Arab by raising his living standard like MJ thinks. You can't buy the Arab. He believes that I'm the faith because, as you say, you're from Brooklyn. But he isn't against Kahana. He's against Israel. He says, what right does Israel have to be there? Because they didn't come from Brooklyn, but they came from, let's say, Russia.
So you can't live together?
Sure. They in their state now, and we in ours. Wonderful.
We'll be back
neighbors.
With your phone calls for Rabbi Meir Kahana after these messages. With Rabbi Meir Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League, member of the Israeli Knesset, Toronto. Hello.
Yes, Rabbi Kahana.
Yes.
I just want to say I support you very much, but I have one question. You correctly state that the demographic growth of the Arab population, either through military means or through an Arab birth rate, will be a future threat to Israel, and we can, God forbid, lose our state.
Right.
But at the same time, you've also said, and you've quoted from biblical authority, that there will never again be a third exile for the Jewish people. Only we in the exile are going to have problems. So how could the possibility exist that the Arabs could take over Israel through an increasing birth rate, while at the same time it's stated, and as you've quoted clearly in the Bible, that there will never again occur.
All right, how can that happen?
Well, clearly what I'm saying is that if we would let them do it. Now, obviously, there are Jews who won't let that do it. In this next election, which I assume will be within a year, we're going to be the third largest party in Knesset and have the balance of power, and that will stop it.
You'll be prime minister someday, you think?
Yes, I do.
We go to Milwaukee. Hello.
Yeah, I have a question for the rabbi.
Yes, sir.
In light of the recent confirmation of the fact that the Israeli government has produced and stockpiled over 100 nuclear warheads,
mm-hmm.
What would be the reason for continuing to produce and stockpile these things when, if they were ever used, it would result in mass destruction, not only to whoever the enemy is, in quotes, but also to Israel?
My friend, why do you think this country has those weapons? If this country didn't have those weapons, the Russians would now be sitting in my seat. So, therefore, those weapons are stockpiled as a kind of a warning to the Arabs. Don't even think of parking on our state.
Denver, Colorado. Hello.
Hey, Kahana.
Yes. This is obviously a very, very friendly call. Go on.
What's the question, sir? I think he's gone. This is hilarious.
He was just shocked out of his socks.
He was shocked, but we actually picked up the phone. Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League, Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hello.
Hi, Rabbi.
Hi.
God bless you.
Thank you.
What kind of differences would you see in Israel if there was a Arab majority? That's the first question.
All right, can you answer that?
Well, if there would be one, then Israel would not be Israel. Israel is the Jewish state, and that can only be so if they run the country.
You would not live there, in other words. You would leave them.
They would kill me.
Second question.
Okay, now, how much, if any, of the occupied land would you think could be returned, if any, if Israel had some security guarantees from its Arab neighbors?
There are no occupied lands. They are liberated lands, and nothing should be given up if it is yours. What guarantees would be worth a piece of paper from Arabs who, when they had these so-called lands in 1967, went to war with Israel? There were no guarantees. I don't trust them.
All Arabs?
Why? Because I respect them. Because they sincerely believe that I'm a thief.
Ithaca, New York. Hello.
Hi. I have two quick questions. First, you're planning to come up to Cornell in
on Sunday, right? That's great, boy. I can imagine the picketing, the demonstration. It'll be an exciting
day.
They
tried to stop you from speaking, didn't they?
They're not going to try and stop it. There'll be a lot of tickets. I was just wondering if there's going to be a charge for admission. I was wondering where the money is going.
I have no idea.
Are you
no
getting
idea.
Paid a fee?
Yes, of course. But that fee never goes to, you know, me personally. It goes to make Kahana the Prime Minister, which is a joyful thought.
You have a second question, sir?
Question, yeah. Right after you were elected to the Knesset,
yes.
You marched through an Arab neighborhood in Israel with about 200 supporters shouting death to the Arabs.
Yeah.
And then also you, in 84, you also attempted to enter the town of El Fahm with weapons.
El Fahm.
El Fahm,
yes, go on.
With weapons of another group, and you were stopped by the Israeli police, and then you claimed you were trying...
Well, get to your question, sir. I'm running close on time.
With the statement there for the Arabs, does that mean if they refuse to leave, that you will forcibly try to evict them from Israel or try to kill them?
One, we did not march through any Arab area shouting, kill the Arabs. Two, we didn't come with weapons to that Arab village. We came to hold a rally in a similar way that Arabs can hold rallies in Jewish cities.
And if you were prime minister, what would you do? Throw them out?
No, I would offer them the choice of living in Israel as non citizens, or leaving or leaving a country. If they
forcibly.
Leaving a country willingly with compensation, or forcibly without.
Willingly with compensation.
Yes.
Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League, a member of the Israeli Knesset, who believes he will someday be Israel's prime minister. We're going to pause for news headlines. Rabbi Meir Kahana, we go to Columbia, Maryland. Hello.
Rabbi Kahana?
Yes.
What will you do with reinterpreting the central message of Judaism, love your neighbor as yourself and love the stranger as a citizen, in Leviticus 19, chapter, verse 18 and verses 34, that you treat the stranger as a citizen.
Okay.
It refers to the stranger who is a convert to Judaism. That's what it says in the Talmud, yes. All right.
Okay, we go to Sicklerville, New Jersey. Hello.
Hi, Meir Kahana. Is it true you have a lawyer on your staff of questionable legal credentials?
Questionable legal credentials?
Who are you referring to?
Wait.
You know such a person?
No.
Doesn't know him, sir. Washington, D.C. Hello.
Yes, Meir Kahana. I'm a member of Jews Against Zionists, and I put blood over your head.
He's mad, huh?
Well, no.
He says he's the guy who poured blood over his head.
He's the guy, and you can see the type.
They didn't arrest him?
Yes. Yeah. He was arrested. Now I'm pressing charges.
Why would some? What are you doing? You're thinking, is this the Larry? Can we cut that? Why? Why do we cut it? Oh, come on. It's an accepted. Good thing next. This the Larry. We cut that? I'm sorry if we cut a call. We shouldn't have been cut. This is the Larry King Show. Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana of the Jewish Defense League, the founder of the Jewish Defense League, and a member of the Israeli Knesset. Can we take the next call? What am I, shrapnel? There was no curse word said. This is the Larry King Show. We go to Toronto. Hello.
Yes, Larry, can I ask three quick questions?
No.
Two?
No.
Okay.
I got a load of calls. That's only one question.
Is there any ideological contradiction in being a democratic socialist and supporting the Koch movement? And are you aware?
No, there is absolutely not. You can, of course, be one. Certainly so.
Bethesda, Maryland. Hello.
Yes, sir. Could you comment on, one, Israeli arms shipments to Iran, and two, the recent reports that Israel has 200 nuclear weapons, and as prime minister, when would you use a nuclear weapon?
Okay. Fair. One, I think that any arms shipments by Israel to Iran is insane and outrage. Two, thank God Israel has those weapons. Three, we would hope never to have to use those weapons. But if Israel would ever be in danger of going under, we would use it.
Brooklyn, New York. Hello.
Hello, Rabbi Tahani.
Yes.
I'm calling from Downstate. You know Downstate Medical School?
Downstate Medical School, yes, indeed.
Yeah, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is you always talk about the long-term problem facing Israel,
yes.
The Arab question with population, how it's growing more rapidly than the Jewish population.
Yes, it is.
But don't you think also an equally important problem facing the Jewish people is the resolution of the people to hold on and fight for Israel?
Is the? I'm sorry.
It seems like a lot of young Israelis from there want VCRs, and they want color TVs, and they want...
Yeah.
A good standard of living like everyone else in the Western world.
You're right. It's a great, great problem.
And we have yuppies?
Puppies. I don't know. Here's the thing. I think that there is no question that there is a great, great struggle taking place inside Israel today among Jews over Israel's soul. Will Israel be a Jewish state or a Hebrew-speaking America or Canada or so on? You're right. I think that if the young Jews don't feel Judaism, not just Zionism, they'll have neither Judaism nor Zionism. That's the real struggle. And in the end, there's going to be a real battle between Jews and Jews inside Israel.
Schenectady, New York. Hello.
Hello. I recently read The Bible as History by Werner Keller. Have you read it?
No, I stick to the original.
Okay, well, what the Bible as History does, it compares the original to actual substantiated archaeological finds. And I'm just, there's a lot of, contradictions that this book has turned up. I just would recommend that maybe you should read it.
Okay, fine.
Why
do you dismiss it when you want to learn this? What if the Bible was wrong?
Wouldn't
that be a rude awakening? Why dismiss it?
What if his book's wrong?
You can't be closed to knowledge.
Of course not.
Then why not if something comes along that opens
your
eyes?
I will read it, sure, certainly. Of course.
That would be silly.
I think that he should, but you're right, I think that he should also read the Bible.
Buffalo, New York, hello.
Hi, Rabbi Dahan. I've heard you many times in Buffalo. I just want to say hello. And
hi.
I have a few questions, or one question. I send my, as you've always said, send your child to Jewish school. I do send him to Jewish day school. And I'm worried in the world today, bombings in Istanbul, bombings in Paris. How are we going to protect ourselves against this war against the Jews? I don't even think it's Israel. It's just getting the Jews now. Another thing is, I don't think...
One question. That's it.
You're right. There's a real, real problem there. I think that the only way to deal with terror is terror. I think that the only way to deal with bad guys is being bad. And it's nonsense about let's not sink to their level.
Why is that nonsense?
Because you don't sink to their level. You sink 6 feet below. You're not better than they are. You're deader than they are. It's incredible. If this were World War II, and we were fighting Nazis, and there would be terror used against Germans inside Germany, do you think that any Jewish liberal would have ever cried out? Of course not. So the fact is that on the day that car bombs go off in Damascus, on that day and only on that day will the Syrians stop and say, hey, it's not worth it.
But you don't favor the killing of children.
I don't favor the killing of anybody. But when they kill me, I favor any kind of action which will stop that. It's an incredible thing, this insanity of saying I'd rather die than kill that person killing me.
Providence, Rhode Island. Hello.
Well, good evening, Rabbi.
Good evening.
The question is this. Following the last point, if I were tomorrow on the West Bank to blow up a school bus of Arab children,
yes,
and I was arrested,
mm-hmm,
would you demand my release?
Absolutely not.
How about with the shooting then of the demanding of the release of the people who shot at the buses in the West Bank that you do demand the release for?
Those weren't children, fella. Those weren't children. And neither were the Arab mayors whose legs got blown off. Those weren't children. We were dealing, and we are dealing with people who, if they could, would repeat tomorrow the massacre of Jews in the 1920s and 1930s and 1940s.
We'll be back with Rabbi Meir Kahana after these messages. Gordon with Rabbi Meir Kahana. Hello.
Rabbi, what makes the Rosenbergs so hateful? Is it their fear of jobs, or they'll lose their jobs because institutions are instructing them to behave like that, or is it their actual opinion? I think the Rosenbergs are more of a menace than most Arabs. I've always regarded them as wretches, and never representing Judaism, and you're one of the few who really brings out this detestable character, and it really shows up.
Yeah, you're right. Listen, he's a tiny cog in this wheel. He's a functionary, and for the $70,000 a year that he is making, he will say anything that the OGC says.
Do you think Jews are superior?
Of course not. There are stupid Jews and there are smart Jews. And
they're not a superior race.
Of course not.
Nor a superior religion.
They aren't a race.
They're not a race.
Of course not. Judaism is superior. Jews aren't.
Judaism as a religion is superior.
Of course it is.
Christianity is superior.
To any other faith.
To Montclair, New Jersey. Hello.
Yes, Rabbi Kahana.
Yes.
What happened to this group that calls itself the Black Hebrews or the Hebrew Israelites? Settled in Israel and who used to be associated with Farrakhan. I know that Israel has been trying to get them expelled because they're a threat to the state. What's been happening?
Well, first of all, these are a bunch of, you know, thugs who left this country, went to Africa, were thrown out of one of the West African countries, and then came to Israel. Israel let them stay there without papers, despite the fact that every so often their leader, a fellow named Carter, would issue statements against Israel, against Jews, anti-Semitic statements. These fellows should have been tossed out on their ear years ago. I don't see why Israel is trying to throw them out. Just throw them out.
Are they Jews?
Of course not.
Do you believe in freedom of speech?
Absolutely.
They have no right to speak?
They have no right to...
You don't believe in
that? Wait. A non-citizen has no right to come into any country and say, we're going to overthrow the country.
They do in America.
Well, I want to tell you something. That if a non-citizen comes in here, that he doesn't have the rights of citizens. I know that because I'm now in the same battle. So that's...
You're denied free speech in this country?
No, but I can be denied the right to enter the country.
To Phoenix, Arizona. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Kahane. I have a question in reference to your statements about the Arabs and other non-Jews.
Mm-hmm. So, yes.
And your promised treatment of Arabs as non-citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And their forceful eviction and so forth.
What is this?
Tell me, what's the difference, Mr. Kahane, between you and Hitler, and how can you blame Hitler for what he did for his country?
I haven't heard that question in about 15 minutes. The fact of the matter is that...
Hitler said Germany was for Germans.
Right.
Okay, go ahead. Forgive me, Mayor.
Listen to me. Okay. If the Jews of Germany would have done what the Arabs of Israel do, meaning if the Jews of Germany would have run around Germany saying it's really our country and the Germans took it from us, and when we become a majority here, we're gonna take it over and call it Israel and then massacre the Germans, then Hitler would have been right in expelling the Jews. Expelling and not killing. The Arabs are not like the Jews. The German Jews wanted nothing more than to be the best Germans that ever lived. The Arabs don't want to be Jewish or in Israel. They massacred us in the 20s, and I assume that you're Arab. In the 20s, in the 30s, and 40s, they massacred Jews. They massacred them. Now, that will never happen again, fella. I'm sick and tired of seeing Jews losers. It's much better to be a winner. Look at the Mets. So, therefore, whether you like it or not, we aren't going to play dead again. The Arabs can live in any of their countries, and the Jews will live in their one country.
Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello.
Rabbi, I've been to Israel, and most of the people there seemed a lot more level-headed and a lot less bigoted than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason...
I only speak Hebrew, that's why. Go on.
The only reason I can see that you have a seat in Parliament now and that there's a danger of you becoming Prime Minister is because Arabs are voting for you because they think that you can tear Israel apart quicker internally with your radical crazy ideas than they could with any external forces.
Now that is a real level-headed comment, I must say. Tell me, fella, out of my 26,000 votes, how many Arabs voted for me? 19.
All right, Baltimore. Hello,
Mr. King, Mr. Kahane, or Rabbi Kahane.
Yes.
Excuse me. Who are these jerks that went to Romania to lick the boots of the Palestinians And do you think Jesse Jackson will drive the Jews in the Democratic Party?
Well, first of all, those jerks that went there are, you know, leftists. And very, very sick people. These are the kinds of Jews who are a far, far greater threat to Israel than the Arabs are. As far as Jesse Jackson is concerned, Jesse Jackson is a bigot, an anti-Semite, a racist, a white hater, and he's bad for all little children, white or black. Hopefully, not more than a few sick Jews will, you know, vote for him. If Jesse Jackson would have been white and said the things that he said about Jews, the B'nai B'rith would have been drifting all over the place.
You're not a fan of B'nai B'rith, are you?
I'm not a fan of B'nai B'rith.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with Rabbi Meir Kahana. Baltimore for Rabbi Meir Kahana. Hello.
Shalom Aleichem. I am a public school teacher, and one of my colleagues is a Muslim. He claims, Rabbi Kahana, that you are racist, but I told him that unlike Minister Farrakhan, you have never said that Islam is a better religion or that the only good Muslim is a dead Muslim.
That's right. That's true.
The Baltimore Sun recently published a letter stating with the remains of Solomon's temple underneath the Mosque of Omar.
Mm-hmm.
It was signed by a Polish person with the name Kazimir N. Tukasarain.
Yeah.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you. We go to Washington. Hello.
Hi, Rabbi Kahana.
Hi.
Yeah, I go to a Jewish faith school. I've been there for 10 years, and my question is this. You say that we as Jews are entitled to the state of Israel, and it says so in the Bible, and I believe that. And you say that if the Arabs live there, should be as non-citizens. Then what would you say if suddenly the American Indians grew stronger and were able to somehow take over this country again and decided that since we weren't Native Americans, that we had come over and pushed them out of their homeland, that this was their land and we were infringing on their bounds? Isn't it the same thing?
Maybe it is. And then you would have a very, very big problem.
Would you go quietly into the good night?
Of course not. I live in Israel.
Supposing you were still in Brooklyn.
I don't know what I would do.
Indian nation.
They
have a case.
It might be so. It might be so. But since I'm not there and you are, you have the problem.
Southfield, Michigan. Hello.
Hello. Rabbi Kahana.
Yes.
Do you think it would be a more appropriate liberal Israeli position to say the so-called occupied territories
mm-hmm.
should be given back to the Arabs, and if they would not agree to the present borders but would attack Israel, they would be drop-kicked into Jordan or Dearborn, and therefore that would end the question?
Why don't we do that now? Why am I so insane as to give, as you say, back? I mean, you don't give back something which isn't theirs, but why should I give this thing back, bring them back within 15 miles of my coast, and in any war, they might win? Do you know how small Israel is in its pre-1967 boundaries? What am I, crazy? A people that started five wars with me, I have to give up land?
What would you do about the Palestinian refugees so that wouldn't be your concern?
That's not true. I would hope that they would go to Jordan, call it Palestine, and I would give money to the UAA, United Arab Appeal.
You would?
I certainly would.
Naples, New York. Hello.
Yes, Rabbi, using your logic that it is morally justifiable to deny Arabs living in Israel of their citizenship in order to build a Jewish state,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it be morally justifiable to deny Jewish Americans of their citizenship here in order to build a Christian state in America?
The great, great difference is that this country was not founded as that state. And Israel was founded from its inception as the Jewish state. That's a tremendous difference. And that is a great, great problem that liberals have, that M.J. Rosenberg has, as you'll probably hear soon. And I must say again, I take this one more chance, M.J. Rosenberg is an Arab, because only Arabs won't sit with other Jews.
Cleveland, Ohio. Hello.
Yes, Meyer Kahana.
Yes.
I am a Christian, but I agree with just about everything you say concerning Israel and the end times. And I would specifically like to refer people to the Valley of the Dry, Dry Bones. And
Ezekiel, yes. Ezekiel, yeah.
And the following prophecies, 38 and 39 of Ezekiel, refer to a northern nation, which is probably Russia, and also a confederate concerning Persia and Ethiopia invading Israel, and God using them as an example
mm-hmm.
to destroy these nations, and Israel once again being confirmed in God's eyes.
Okay, well, thank you for that. A couple other things. Why if God chose the people of Israel as the superior religion, why has he made it so hard on them?
Quite obviously, a people is clearly held up to a higher standard if it knows better, if it should know better. Clearly, I don't punish some little youngster who doesn't know in the same way that I would punish an adult felon.
Hmm.
That's the simple reason.
Do you think your vision will ever come about?
Not the slightest doubt.
Why? I mean, the odds right now would be against you.
Look, let's get one thing clear. I am a believer. I believe that God runs the world, and I believe that there's a real God, not this nonsensical modern constant God who is the spirits inside man like Alka-Seltzer. He runs the world. He's a transcendental being. I believe that the Jewish people is God's chosen people. I believe that the state of Israel came into being as God's hand, and that there is a destiny. And that this world isn't just some kind of a case.
Why do you believe you'll see it?
I don't know whether I'll see it, but you asked whether my vision would come about. Yes. I may not see it. It may not come about in my time, but it'll come about in its own time. And I think that we are in that time. I really do.
You miss baseball?
God, do I miss baseball. I can't tell you how I miss baseball.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Rabbi Meir Kahana. He's M.J. Rosenberg, the Washington representative of the American Jewish Committee. Why, M.J., and I think this is a fair question, will people like yourself and other prominent figures in the American Jewish community not appear with Rabbi Kahana?
Well, it's a policy of the organized American Jewish community not to dignify Kahana by sharing a platform with him. He says that we're afraid to debate him, that he'll tear us apart. That's not it. He is a media event. He got 25,000 votes in the Knesset election. He's a... The whole Koch movement in Israel is a freaky phenomenon, and all he thrives on is press attention, media attention around the world, and we don't want to dignify him. However, we do want to respond to him.
Is he an embarrassment to you?
I think that he is basically he's not an embarrassment to me personally, but what he is an embarrassment to Jews as a people. I mean, he is a one-man propaganda machine for the PLO cause. I'll explain that. Every time Kahana appears anywhere, his words make converts for the PLO position. The idea, when he goes on and says expel the Arabs from Israel, he's making converts for Yasser Arafat. So that's not an embarrassment to me, but what it is, it offends me as someone who supports Israel the way I do.
How about when he attacks all the Jews like yourself in America, personal attacks he did on you as a paid representative, etc.?
Yeah, I know. I was really angry when he called me fat, which isn't the case. But this is part of his game. He builds himself up by saying that the whole Jewish community is, we're all banded against Meir Kahana. He's an irrelevancy. He's an irrelevancy in Israel, and he's an irrelevancy here. He is never going to be prime minister of Israel. 25,000 votes to be prime minister? The man basically is a joke.
But a joke who gets a lot of attention, and the Jewish Defense League is not a joke. I mean, it may be a joke, but it certainly has...
It has its 500 members, 500, 600 members in the United States.
Let's ask it this way. Certainly when one watches even the most demagogic of people, if you watched let's say Farrakhan speak to a crowd of blacks, they may disagree with 80% of what he says, but there's 20% that any minority group has an appeal. Do you have that with Kahana? Is there anything he said in the past hour that appealed to you?
Yeah,
as a Jewish nationalist. Anything that, when he discussed Jews being killed in the 20s and gunned down in the streets.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that part of the appeal of people like this, that you can't say no to everything he says?
Right, but let me explain the difference. The difference is that I'm a lot younger than Mark Kahana, and I was born after the establishment of the State of Israel. He is what we call in Hebrew, he's a Galut Jew. Galut means diaspora. He's a Jew of the exile. Meir Kahana can't deal with the reality of Jewish power in the 1980s. We don't need his JDL boys running around with their sticks and stones anymore. That would have been an appropriate response to gangs in the 1920s. We're talking now about a Jewish state, the State of Israel, that according to various reports is one of the strongest military powers in the world. It won the Six-Day War against all the Arab world in 6 days. It won the 73 War. It stands there strong and firm and alone and holds off the whole Arab world. Who needs Meir Kahana and his bunch of thugs? He's an irrelevancy. He is part of a diaspora mentality that is totally irrelevant to Jews today. And to Jews of my age and my generation, there is where he's an embarrassment. He represents an attitude that predates the existence of the State of Israel. So that offends me.
Do you fear, as he fears, an Arab majority?
I think that there is a possibility of an ultimate Arab majority in Israel if Israel retains all of the territories from 67, if indefinitely. That could happen, or 50 years, 60 years.
You fear that?
Yeah, I think that's that is a danger to the state of Israel.
That's what he's talking about, though, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's saying get rid of it now.
Well, get rid of the danger now.
By saying they're not citizens.
Well, that's not the only alternative. The other alternative is the one that the State of Israel accepts, and the same one that I accept, which is that you negotiate over those territories, which means Israel in 19 years has not annexed the West Bank and Gaza. It has no intention of annexing the West Bank and Gaza for many reasons, among them the demographic reasons that Kahana cites. Accordingly, I support the position of the State of Israel. Negotiate, and when you negotiate a solution, you have an end to that problem he talks about. Not by adopting Nazi-like methods of expelling people from their homes, and if they won't leave, killing them. I mean, that's beyond the pale of rational discussion.
He says that the weak negotiate with enemies.
That's an absurdity. I think that the United States and the Soviet Union negotiate. Neither side is weak. That's absurd.
We'll be right back with M.J. Rosenberg, the Washington representative of the American Jewish Committee. We'll be going to... Yes, is M.J. Rosenberg, the Washington representative of the American Jewish Committee. Has the media overplayed him?
Yeah, I think the media has. I think that this guy gets 25,000 votes in an Israeli election. He's front page news all over the world. You know, in Washington, the day after the last Israeli election, when Peres became prime minister, the guy who made the front page was Meir Kahana. I mean, this is peculiar. I mean, every country has its quasi-fascist phenomenon. In Israel, the guy gets 26,000 votes. In France, they have a guy, Jean Le Pen, who ran as a candidate of the National Front Party. He got 10% of the vote on an anti-Arab, throw-the-Arabs-out-of-France platform, openly racist platform. Was that big news? No. Everyone knows Kahana, but nobody knows Le Pen. And that's France, a civilized country also. He's a media creation.
His statement that the Jewish leadership in America doesn't like him, but the Jews of America know what he's talking about.
There's no evidence that the Jews of America like him, and I think the Jews are represented by their organizations. I think if the Jews of America liked him, the organizations would like him too. He's got a constituency of a few thousand people, and not all of them are bad people. I think that they just don't understand what Israel is all about and what a modern Jewish state and a modern Jewish army and a modern Jewish air force, what that all means. They haven't assimilated the central message of 1948.
You don't relate it to the Bible, that this is your chosen state, that you are the best religion,
well,
you are the only religion?
I think that's the Bible, and that's not politics, and that is not the kind of thing on
but
which
he believes in the Bible.
He believes in the Bible. He believes in his version of the Bible, his quotations that could justify throwing people out of their homes and that kind of thing. There are all sorts of biblical interpretations. He's got his own version.
When you say he is a friend of the Arabs, would you elaborate on that a little more? Because he got one caller intimated at that.
Yeah, well, It's pretty simple. I mean, he did get angry at that call, and I thought the caller was right on target. The fact of the matter is, the Arab rejectionists, not the whole Arab world, but the Arabs who despise Israel and don't want to coexist with Israel, the person they most have feared in Israeli public life is Shimon Peres. Why? Because of Shimon Peres's image. Shimon Peres says, look, we'll negotiate, we'll talk, and he makes Israel look good. Israel's standing in the world was never higher than when Shimon Peres was prime minister, and before Peres, when Golda Meir was prime minister. When Israel's line was a softer line. Mark Kahana, on the other hand, represents the ugliest face that Zionism could possibly have. And even though he's a fluky phenomenon, for the Arab rejectionists, he's proof that this is what Zionism is all about. They're not going to say he's aberrational. It's for us. It's for me, a Jewish communal.
Disavow that person who threw the die on Kahana today.
That's despicable. That's frightening that kind of thing can happen at the National Press Club.
Onward to the call, Springfield, Virginia. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Mr. Rosenberg.
Hi.
I'm kind of proud of Meir Kahani, and I generally support his views, and I think many other Jews, more than you believe, support his views. But I have a question for you, and I wonder why do you and the so-called establishment Jews grovel, you know, before Jesse Jackson or Farrakhan, and like the people like that black guy who was invited to the University of Maryland for a second time after he said the only good Jew is a dead Jew.
Do you grovel before these people?
Yeah, I can't remember groveling before Jesse Jackson or Louis Farrakhan. As far as the reaction at the University of Maryland to the former Stokely Carmichael, now known as Kwame Ture, I think Jewish students handled it right. They went in there without the help of the JDL and Meir Kahana. They went in there, they broke their way into the meeting, and they got their views across. I think that there's no groveling going on in the Jewish community today.
New York City, hello.
Hello. I find that there are two types of Jews that left Europe. There are those Jews who went to Israel who became strong and learned how to fight and stand up for what they believed in. And there are those who came to America who buckled to everything that happened to them. And Mr. Rosenberg, the way it appears from your answers, and I believe you're not a religious man from what I can gather, you have no knowledge of the Bible at all. I mean, it's a childish knowledge, if anything. You seem to be one of those people who seems to, like, just buckle under to everything around you.
What do you mean by buckle under, sir? Give me an example.
He doesn't seem to be able to stand up to any pressures.
What do you mean? Give me an example. Buckle him under.
Okay, let us assume that Meir Kahana gets 500,000 votes. Will he then go and talk and be on the same platform with Meir Kahana, or will he be still afraid to deal with it?
Well, nothing would change if we got 500,000 votes. No, I would not go on the same platform with them.
Ithaca, New York. Hello.
Hello, I'm from Cornell University. We'll be protesting this Sunday. I just wanted to ask a question. You said that negotiation is the way to work for peace in the Middle East. Let's say that negotiation in the future proves to be as fruitless as it has in the past, and that Arabs do become a voting majority in Israel. What is your solution to that problem?
I don't accept the possibility that negotiations will always be fruitless. The fact that we have the Camp David peace treaty, the fact that Anwar Sadat on one fine and wonderful Saturday in November 1977 got on a plane and flew to Jerusalem, that proves to me that there can be a peace treaty and that there will be a peace settlement.
Philadelphia with M.J. Rosenberg. Hello.
Oh, hello, M.J. Mr. Rosenberg. I'd like to get your opinion on the status of the black Israelites in Israel and how you see them, because I heard the other person's response. And also, he was saying about, I know that they have several in jail here in the United States, but you got 2,000 people over there. And a lot of those people were born there.
All right, you're a store tenant, MJ.
Well, I think that problem is being handled by the Israeli judicial system. Some of them have been proven to be criminals. Israel investigates them to find out which ones are legitimate, serious Jews. You know, Israel makes no racial distinction. The whole point of the Ethiopian rescue, saving the black Jews of Ethiopia, demonstrates that Israel is totally non-racist.
Williamsville, New York. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm just listening again to you. I just, as a Jew and a supporter of Kahani, I find this whole thing a little bit despicable that you would try to represent the American Jewish feeling about him. I just,
when you say he represents the American Jewish Committee, so that's an organization.
Well, it does supposedly represent a certain population of.
No, of course it does.
Well, I just don't think that he represents the majority of the Jews.
You think Rabbi Kahana does?
I think he does, yes.
Represents the majority of the Jews?
I think he does, and his gut feelings, I think in the gut feeling of every Jew, what Kahani says, certainly makes a mark and makes people think.
Do you have a question?
I was just wondering why he thinks that this is, why he thinks that he cannot appear with Kahani and why he wouldn't want to.
The point is that every major Jewish organization has the same view of Kahana, that he is a reprehensible racist. That is, Jewish organizations from the right to the left, all across the board, and they have a membership combined of well over a million Jews. I'm not just speaking for myself here.
Paramus, New Jersey. Hello.
Yes, Larry, great show tonight. I just wanted to say to your guest that you have at hand that everything that is being said about Rabbi Kahani is exactly what was said about Zev Jabotinsky and his Beit Harim back in the 1930s by Rabbi Stephen Wise and the rest of the Jewish establishment. They were labeled Nazis, fascists, and Hitlerites, too. Stephen Wise said that if the Beit Harim ever were elected to power in Israel, that there would be a group of brown shirts controlling Palestine. So, and also...
You have a question, sir.
The last thing I wanted to say was that Jabotinsky was banned from speaking in America in synagogues and Jewish civic groups, and Jews were told not to go and see him and not to debate him from the organized establishment and the synagogues of America. I would like him to respond.
You want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, Jabotinsky, of course, was the founder of the right-wing revisionist movement in Israel. Its leading spokesman today remains, though he's in retirement, Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin, who has come out of retirement hardly at all since he left office. You know, he left after his wife died and after the Lebanon War. He has spoken out on one occasion to repudiate Meir Kahana. I think that demonstrates what Jabotinsky would say if he were alive.
And it was Mr. Begin I met with Mrs. Sadat, as I remember.
Exactly.
Our guest is M.J. Rosenberg. He's Washington representative of the American Jewish Committee, and he's appearing in response to the appearance in the prior hour of Rabbi Meir Kahana of the Israeli Knesset.
I find him to be one of the more, or if not one of the most inspirational leaders in the Jewish community in terms of energizing Jews such as myself to be active on behalf of Israel and other causes that are dear to Jews in this country and elsewhere. And I just want to know if he could respond to the charges that you are a detriment to Jews, to the Jewish cause, you're an Arab, things to that effect.
Yeah, Rabbi Kahana did level a personal attack in that vein, so you're entitled to say anything you want in response.
Yeah,
he called you an Arab.
He called me an Arab three times. He considers that an epithet for him. That's a curse to call someone an Arab. I'm not an Arab. If I were an Arab, I wouldn't be ashamed of being an Arab. It's not an insult to call me an Arab. I'm not an Arab. I'm a Jew. And as far as this other caller who is, you know, questioning my religiosity, this is the type of tactic that they use to discredit anyone who disagrees with them. Standard.
Baltimore, hello.
Hello. MJ, I would like to ask a question that Reverend Kahana has been bringing up quite frequently. What he says is that if Israel is going to be a Western democracy, then the Arab population does have the right to reproduce to such an extent, even without the occupied territories, or actually the liberated territories, to reproduce to such an extent that they become a majority and take control of the Knesset and vote the Jewish state out of existence. Zionism guarantees that there'll be a Jewish majority because it says there has to be a Jewish state. How can you resolve that conflict?
Well, as I said, it will be resolved in the context of negotiations. The fact of the matter is that the Arab population of Israel itself, that is not including the West Bank and Gaza, is 17%. It's not going to become much more than that in any time in the foreseeable future.
Well, let's ask it this way. Supposing it did, do you view Israel as a Jewish state or a state?
Israel is a Jewish state. And Israel has to remain a Jewish
state.
It will
never allow an Arab majority.
It will never allow an Arab majority.
Isn't that a racist statement?
No, it's just like America will always would insist on an American majority, or France would insist on a French majority. There's nothing more inherent about a Jewish state being racist than about any other state.
If Hispanics became 52% of America, they could elect a Hispanic president.
I guess that's possible. But that's possible. I don't see that's really relevant.
Okay. To Philadelphia, hello.
Mr. Rosenberg, I'd like to ask you, why Israeli Arabs who are citizens of the state do do not serve in the Israeli armed forces, what does that say about their loyalty and rights to citizenship? And lastly, if they do not serve in the armed forces, should they be required to perform some kind of national service to the state?
Okay. Israeli Arabs are not asked to serve in the armed forces because the government of Israel has felt right from the beginning that it would be too much to ask Israeli Arabs to fight in wars against their brethren from the neighboring countries. They're not exactly clamoring to join the Israeli army, though in fact there are Arabs who do serve in various capacities.
If you volunteered, you wouldn't be allowed in?
Yes, there are in some cases.
Toronto, hello.
Hello. My name is Mayor Halevy. I'm the national chairman of the Jewish Defense League in Canada. I joined the Jewish Defense League because of a lack of action by the organized Jewish community to take the issue of Nazi war criminals and neo-Nazis seriously. I take offense to comments made by Mr. Rosenberg that the Jewish Defense League is composed of thugs. We are not composed of thugs. We have done very serious work on the issue of Nazi war criminals, made representations to the government, and infiltrated neo-Nazi organizations and assisted in criminal prosecutions of neo-Nazis and hate mongers. How does he explain the attack that we are thugs?
Well, I think that's what you've done in that case in Canada, and I'm not familiar with it. If you did that, that's good. However, in the United States, the problem of Nazi war criminals living here was primarily dealt with by a very mainstream Jewish figure, Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman of New York, who pressed Congress to start the investigation and deportation of Nazi war criminals.
You think they've had thug-like acts in this country, though?
The Jewish eventually, yeah.
Chicago, hello.
Yeah, shalom for Saturday's Great Peace March. Which Old or New Testament scriptures best support your positions and best repudiate Mayor Rabbi Kahani's position?
Well, someone called earlier with Leviticus, although Rabbi Kahana said that they were referring only to Jews in the statement of loving your stranger.
Well, Exodus 22:20. Says, you shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. To me, that's pretty clear.
Washington, hello.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Rosenberg.
Hi.
First of all, I think you're fantastic, an inspiration to Jews all over the world. I find Israel to be one of the most inspirational places in the world today, a nation that confronts its problems and its crises boldly and honestly. I wonder, Mr. Rosenberg, do you share Mayor Kahana's gloomy and depressing view of the future of the state of Israel for our children? Or when you hinted at the central message of 1948, did you mean you feel hopeful?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I go to Israel every year and spend a month there with my wife and kids. And I'll tell you, when I'm walking around that country and seeing the vibrancy of the place and the fact that Jewish children in Israel today are probably safer or as safe as they are anywhere in the world, safer than most places, I can't but be hopeful. It's a miracle.
I think I have an area where you may agree with Mayor Kahana. Do you agree with him in lambasting the Israeli government and the United States for dealing arms to Iran?
Well, I'm not ready to lambast because I don't think we know enough about it.
Supposing they did.
I'd still like to know more about it. I'm bothered by the fact that Ronald Reagan would seemingly betray his strong anti-terrorist policy. Bothers me as much that Israel would do the same. But I think there may be more to it than we know. I don't think this is just obviously about the hostages. And I think that McFarland's supposed concern about the next generation of leadership in Iran, I think it's a little bit off base, but there may be something to it.
You agree with Mayor Kahan on the need for Israel to have a nuclear stockpile?
I don't know if Israel has a nuclear stockpile.
They do.
If Kahana is right and they do, it doesn't disturb me at all that they do.
We'll be back after these messages.
On television, last month, October, that according to the Quran, if a Muslim kills a Christian or a Jew, his place in heaven is assured. Mr. Rosenberg, I'd like to ask you, how in God's name can there ever be peace under those circumstances, Mr. Rosenberg?
if that statement is actually in the Quran, then it's a, yeah, it's a deeply troubling thing. However, as I said, neither the Quran nor the Bible or the Old Testament, New Testament, whatever, are political documents. We are, that is a question of theology. We are talking here about politics.
New York City, hello.
Yeah, number one, I want to tell you that I find this Mr. Rosenberg fantastically stupid, yet smart enough to avoid getting on with Kahana at the same time. Over and over again, all he's able to say is that Kahana is insignificant, therefore he won't share a platform with them. They share a platform with Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, neo-Nazis. Are they significant?
Well, Jesse Jackson is significant, sir. I don't know whether... Have you shared a platform with Farrakhan?
No, I wouldn't share a platform with Farrakhan. And I agree, Jesse Jackson is significant.
We go to Brooklyn, New York. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Rosenberg.
Yes.
You claim that Rabbi Kahana doesn't represent a legitimate following in America. Is that true?
Right. I'm not a significant following.
So far, since you've been on the segment, 9 callers have called for Kahana.
Well, that never judge a phone show, sir, even though I conduct one. We are the worst pollsters because we don't control who calls in. And, That is unfair to Mr. Rosenberg. Or if all the calls were critical of Rabbi Kahana, that would be unfair, because the caller, and we have never done an analysis of who calls, we don't know who calls. They call, and we don't screen calls. Every caller gets in, gets on. So you could have a flood of people calling. They knew Mr. Rosenberg was going to be on. They decided they'd call early. That's not fair. On either God, that's not fair.
Fair question, then. Mr. Rosenfeld called Rabbi Kahana an exiled Jew, yet Rabbi Kahana lives in Israel. Mr. Rosenfeld lives in Washington, a place which may be considered the exile. How could he explain that?
I said he had an exile mentality. I wasn't talking about his place of residence. Obviously, the fact that he lives in Israel is an indication he has some level of Zionism. However, his living there has clearly not affected his basic ideology, which, as I said, is a diaspora ideology.
Orlando, Florida. Hello.
Yes, I have more than one question, if I may. First of all, what about Arabs who are Jews?
Arabs who are...
What do you mean, sir?
What about someone who is an Arab and is Jewish?
Well, how do you mean the question?
Well, he says he fears an Arab majority, as if that would necessarily preclude a Jewish majority. And he speaks of Arabs as if that none of them are Jews.
The fact of the matter is that the majority of the population of Israel today are Jews from the Arab countries, from the Middle East, and a large segment of Israel's population, Jewish population, their first language is Arabic. So I was talking about Muslim Arabs and Christian Arabs, not Jews from Arab lands.
In that case, then, it is a religious issue, it seems to me, then.
It's a national issue. It's a question of nationalism.
Arlington, Virginia, hello.
How you doing, Larry?
Hi.
Mr. Rosen.
It's Mr. Rosenberg.
I'm sorry, Mr. Rosenberg. I find the position of the Labor Party in Israel a little disingenuous and quite frankly a little dangerous to Israel. They're saying that they may be able to partition the West Bank in some way, maybe give up Nablus or something like that. You know, no Arab government's going to come even close to that. I think the position of Likud, where they essentially say the West Bank is Israeli territory and the Arabs can have autonomy there, makes a settlement far more feasible, because you can always increase Arab autonomy on the West Bank as a political unit over time. But to partition an area that small just is irresponsible and quite frankly won't work. It just won't. And so I think Likud's position is pretty good. I don't think this has nothing to do with Kahana, who I'm afraid is asking for more trouble than it's worth.
You know, I think that you make a good point. I think it was Likud that accepted the Camp David autonomy plan. In fact, that was a plan that was drafted by Menachem Begin. And I think one can, you know, the Palestinian Arabs made it for them a terrible mistake when they didn't accept autonomy at Camp David, because by now they'd have their autonomous area, and you might have a solution to the problem.
Toronto, hello.
Yes, one quick comment and a question. I think Rabbi Kahana is a true progressive democratic socialist, but I'd like to ask you, do you think that Jackson and Farrakhan's influence in recent years has exacerbated the rift between black and Jewish Americans to the degree that people are going to be in an untenable position and certainly a risk within the Democratic Party
In fairness to Jackson and Adele, my program, he has disavowed many of the thoughts of Reverend Farrakhan. But is there a major split, Jew and Black in America?
I think there's the Jackson candidacy exacerbated the rift between Jews and Blacks. I think, however, we are basically partners and we believe in many of the same things. It is certainly not a division of two groups that is irreconcilable. Not at all.
New York City, hello.
Yes, Mr. Rosenberg, you mentioned earlier that religion and politics have nothing to do with each other. Can I ask you, as a Jew, in your opinion, what is the reason for the existence of the State of Israel? Can Jews not live happily in America without Israel?
Jews can live happily in America no longer without Israel. Israel is the ultimate and final refuge of the Jewish people. It is the only place where we know that no matter what happens anywhere in the world, we can go to Israel and under the law of return, we have a home. So that's the answer to that question. I'm not sure that's a religious answer. It has to do with what Jews are all about, what Jewish history is all about. But our religion is obviously a major component of our national character.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with M.J. Rosenberg, Washington representative of the American Jewish Committee, following these messages. Premier Limousine Service Incorporated is a full-service company offering corporate rates, special packages, excursion fares, and airport transfers in the Baltimore, Washington metropolitan area on a round-the-clock basis. Premier Limousine Service features Cadillac and Lincoln stretch limos as well as sedans. The chauffeurs are skilled and courteous, so take the first step toward Washington, D.C. with a phone call to Premier, 202-898-0108. 202-898-0108. Premier in the nation's capital.
Hi, I'm Art Linkletter, inviting you to join me each weekday for What's Right with America. I'll be telling you stories about people who are doing something very special. Individuals who have rekindled the traditions and values that have made our country so great. What's Right with America will make you feel proud to be an American. So remember to join me over many of these mutual stations.
Did anyone ever tell you that you have a flair for writing? It could have been a short story about a trip you took, an article or short story you did for an organization, a newspaper, or a bulletin. Yes, you may have what it takes to be a professional writer. Did you know that professional writers are everyday people like yourself? You don't have to be a well-known name to write professionally, full-time or part-time. If you enjoy writing and would like a free, no-obligation evaluation of your writing potential, send for the Writer's Aptitude Test offered by the Writer's Institute Home Study School, a division of the Newspaper Institute of America. Write for the test, and then you alone decide what to do after you receive the results. Writer's Institute has no salespeople. Nobody will call you. You're under absolutely no obligation. So for your free copy of the Writer's Aptitude Test, drop a card to Writers, Post Office Box 3840, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10163. That's Writers, Post Office Box 3840, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10163.
You're listening to The Larry King Show, live from the nation's capital. Here again, Larry King.
Brooklyn, New York. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Mr. Rosenberg.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I was told by somebody, a Jewish activist, rabbi, told me that the American Jewish Committee gave $1 million to Jesse Jackson's campaign, Operation Push. Now, it seems to me that the Jewish... Hold on.
Totally not true.
You can answer me. It seems to me that the Jewish organization is stupid and crazy. They're the Jewish civil rights movement.
Right or wrong, sir?
Well, I will
think about it. Baltimore, hello.
Anyway,
hi.
Mr. Rosenberg, you betray an egregious ignorance of Judaism when you say that there's a difference between the Bible and politics, and you offend the religious sensibilities of millions, not just thousands, but millions of people who died over thousands of years of persecution for the fact that the Bible is a political manifesto, and that it says, gracious Bar Elohim, Shemaim et Ha'aretz, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, which Rashi comments to say, that means that God, being the landlord, the creator of the entire universe, can give the world to who we want, can give the land to whom he wants and take it from who he wants. That's why if anybody says, you stole the land from us, meaning the Jewish people are robbers, that God, since he created and gives the world the land to whom it should go, is the one who can say that it goes to the Jewish people and did say. So that it is the beginning of the political manifesto.
You believe that, MJ?
Yeah, it is the beginning, and it's now 1986.
Chicago, hello.
Good evening, Mr. King, and good evening, Mr. Rosenblatt. Thank you for...
Mr. Rosenberg, go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Rosenberg. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to and address some of these issues. Do you remember the song, Land of Milk and Honey, where children can run free? From what I understand today in Israel, the children are not able to walk the streets free. I can give you many, many examples. In the Jerusalem neighborhood of East Talpiot on November 26, 1979, kindergarten teacher Yael Aviv was playing in a small park with the children under care. Suddenly, six Arabs appeared and began throwing stones at the terrified children and shouting, "Jews, go home." This is just one example.
What is the question?
Okay, the question is this. I'm a special education teacher, too, and when the children in my class, when they act out and they don't know how to behave, well, we have to separate them from the other children until they calm down, until they're able to join the group and behave. The situation in Israel today, I'm also a member of Women's American...
You're not asking a question, ma'am. What's the... Are you saying that every Arab is a terrorist who kills kids?
Well, God forbid, no, but most of the Arabs do have a deep hatred of the Jewish people because they feel that we have taken Palestine away from them.
Okay, what is the question?
Well, the question is this. There are 22 Arab states and one Israel. One thing that... Okay, just a little more background.
No, ma'am, I'm running close on time. Please ask a question. Frame it as a question.
Well... Okay, I'll try to do the best I can, and thank you for your
patience. I'm running out of time. What is the question?
The question is this. Since the Arabs are not really strangers to us because they are the descendants also of Abraham, which would refute what Mr. Rosenblatt said with regard... Okay.
What is the question?
What?
I'm sorry, ma'am. Brooklyn, New York. Hello.
Yeah, I like to say as a Jew living in Brooklyn, Mr. Rosenberg does not represent my views.
He didn't say that, sir.
It's an insignificant figure in American Jewish life and world Jewish life. Why is he then a member of the Knesset, which was voted in by Israeli citizens? Number two, he says the only way to agreement with the Palestinian issue is to agreement. Well, we had an agreement in Camp David, and Sadat was killed because of that. We gave up land. What happened after that was that next administration...
What is the question?
Those are two questions. Number one, if he's insignificant, why was he voted for...
Okay,
let me respond to that. He got 25,000 votes out of Israel's country of 4 million people. And that's a demonstration of insignificance. The fact of the matter is, Lyndon LaRouche's candidates in Illinois in the primaries in early 86, which got hundreds of thousands of votes. I mean, we're talking about fringe characters. Maybe they're not insignificant in the sense we shouldn't pay any attention to them, but they're part of the lunatic fringe.
It's obvious, MJ, well, we can't control calls anyone can call, that there's certainly an emotional setting created by Rabbi Kahana.
I think the emotional setting is not just created by Meir Kahana. It is created by the fact that the Arab world has just not reconciled itself to Israel's existence. Israel, I mean, the fact is that Israel has to deal with terrorism constantly. What this woman said before, the one who didn't get around to a question about the crime in Israel where people are attacked, that does happen, and it is happening more and more, and sometimes they are linked to PLO gangs. We know the PLO's goal is the elimination of the State of Israel. They say it, they continue to do their, quote, armed resistance, unquote. This is bound to make Jews feel afraid and anxious and determined to say in Kahana's, the only good phrase that ever came from Kahana was never again. And I think that he's playing off these kind of feelings. And many of these feelings, the feelings are legitimate. Kahana's not. But those feelings that Jews have, I have them too, are legitimate feelings and legitimate fears.
And that, of course, creates the emotionalism that's
around. Yeah, exactly.
He says he'll be prime minister.
He won't be prime minister. It's we saw what the last election showed. Israel is basically split between the Likud and the Labor Party. He is despised as much in Likud as he is in Labor. He won't be prime minister.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our guest has been M.J. Rosenberg, Washington representative of the American Jewish Committee, appearing in response to the appearance in the earlier hour of Rabbi Meir Kahana, the founder of the Jewish Defense League.